You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome to the William Hill Racing Podcast. This is Friday's edition, looking ahead to the action on Friday. Thing is, as we record this, we don't know exactly what's on Friday. Alex Dunn here with Chris Pimlott, and it's just gone 4 o'clock, Pimmers, on Thursday afternoon, and obviously the equine influenza is causing a bit of trouble.
Yeah, it's definitely causing a little bit of a headache, and we haven't heard one way or the other if racing's going to go ahead tomorrow, and it won't be too long before normal service is resumed.
And it may well be that as you're listening to this, you know the outcome of the BHA's looking into the racing on Friday, but as of now, we don't. So, myself and Pimmers are going to focus on two contests at Dundalk. That should be going ahead, as on Thursday we did have action over at Thurles. We're going to get to that shortly, but we're going to start by just dipping into some of Thursday's racing radio, where Pimmers was in the studio. Gary Capewell was the host, Andrew Mount was also there, and they were joined by a few special guests early on in the show to discuss all things horse flu related. Bruce Millington was along first, and then Andrew Thornton, and we're going to hear the best bits from their little interviews now.
Former editor of the Racing Post, Bruce Millington, is on the line to join us for a quick chat now. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Hi, chaps.
Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
It's unusual for racing to have to be cancelled for something such as this in the UK. It's been, 17 or 18 years now since it last happened.
Yes, I mean, I'm hoping that this isn't going to be anything like on the scale of the foot and mouth, because that really would be serious, particularly with Cheltenham and Aintree coming up. But at the moment, you know, we really are in the early stages of knowing the extent of how this is going to affect fixtures, I think. There was an outbreak of equine flu that affected some 20 yards in Newmarket in 2003, and racing continued there. So if you look at that rather than what happened 2 years earlier with foot and mouth, you'd hope that where we are here is the BHA taking this as seriously as possible and taking all precautions to prevent a spread so that racing can resume sooner rather than later. But obviously more tests and more investigations are going on at a fairly frantic pace, I would imagine, today, to ascertain the extent of the problem and the likelihood or otherwise of a spread of this virus taking place if racing resumes.
You look at social media, and that's the first thing that people really want to talk about is, you know, will we have to miss Cheltenham again?
Well, if you want wild speculation, social media is the place to go.
Definitely.
I think being slightly more pragmatic, you know, I think that, you know, this is not foot and mouth. It clearly is serious, and one of the issues you've got here is that it's an airborne virus, and you can inoculate racehorses all you like, but donkeys, non-thoroughbreds, mules, and indeed humans can spread it. So, you know, there's only so much you can do to limit it, but everything that can be done will be done. And, you know, you have to hope that with the right precautions we can get the show back on the road.
Well, one thing we do know is where this has happened in a few racing jurisdictions before. Obviously, there was quite an extreme case of this particular virus in Australia, wasn't there, a few years ago, which, you know, did cause a huge delay to racing and cost a lot of money for them to fix. But the plus side in terms of how that happened over there, for our point of view, is that the vaccinations were brought in pretty much off the back of that, and they are obviously in place. I know it's slightly different, and they don't always work, these vaccinations, with various parts of these flu viruses, but obviously it happened in Australia. It also happened, I think, in India as well. I was reading they had to miss racing for a few months there, but thankfully, because on the back of that, the way that the racing is run over here in the UK is a lot the better for it, if you like.
The fundamental difference there is that equine flu doesn't exist in Australia. It does exist here. It's endemic over here, and therefore needs containing with constant vaccinations. in Australia, there was no such thing. It was obviously imported by horse travelling in there, and therefore they had to take very drastic action in order to completely shut down the possibility of it taking hold, because horses had no immunity, so it would have done in colossal damage if it had spread then. So again, as with the foot and mouth, you're not really comparing apples with apples, and this is more a situation that hopefully can be contained more easily. I mean, obviously, you know, with the Australia example and the foot and mouth, everyone is fairly jittery about it. But, you know, until we get evidence that this is going to be on that kind of scale, I think we probably ought to just keep an open mind and keep fingers crossed that it won't be that bad.
William Hill Racing Radio is now available on your smart speaker. Just tell it to play Racing Radio via TuneIn and leave the rest to us. William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.
We're now joined by a friend of the show, a man who's ridden over 1,000 winners pin. How many did you ride in total?
Seven, I think.
It's a very good afternoon to Andrew Thornton. Hi, Andrew.
Morning, Gary. Morning, Pimmers.
Now, Andrew, how are you?
I'm all right. It's afternoon anyway.
It is, well.
Stories breaking all the time. Obviously, racing has been abandoned in the UK today for precautionary reasons as more tests, etc., etc., take place. But obviously, that's to stop the hopefully getting any further. But obviously, we've got to realise that there are other people affected other than sort of horses by this. We've got stable staff and jockeys and trainers as well. And of course, owners, they're still paying the bills at the moment, Andrew, aren't they?
Yeah, that's it. And jockeys, obviously, they don't get paid unless they go racing as well. I spoke to a few of the lads this morning. Had a chat with Brian Hughes, William Kennedy. They'd normally be riding out, every day of the week. But they haven't ridden out this morning purely and simply off the back of they were both racing yesterday. Brian was up at Ayr and William Kennedy, he was at Ludlow. So, you know, the sensible decision, you don't want to be going anywhere. And very conscious of, you know, having ridden out the previous morning, everything that they've got at home, straight in the wash. It's been to Will Kennedy as well. And a lot of these lads ride out at different yards as well, so very conscious of saddle cloths or saddles they use from a riding out basis, and obviously the clothing that they wear, that wants to be thoroughly, you know, put on 60 degrees to make sure that it doesn't get spread, because as we know, you know, it can spread from horses to humans. It doesn't affect humans, but
they pass
humans
it on.
Can then pass it on to other horses at other yards. So just been, I think basically everybody has been very, very wary of their movements.
Yeah, a couple of things, Andrew. Yeah. A, do you feel that the mild weather that we had till recently, do you think that's had something to do with this virus, because we haven't had enough cold to chill the bugs initially?
Well, just, I'm not so sure of that. I think there's been something rumbling in about, so the last month, about trainers to be wary, to be very cautious. Maybe it is because of that, because it was very, very mild up until before Christmas. The best way with horses, as you know, Pimmers, is, you know, have they eaten up in the morning? Are they doing anything unusual? You know the horses like the back of your hand, like you would the wife, you know, if you took your head out the feed pot, we would be worried.
Yeah, but the thing is, Andrew, I ran three horses there the other week. Can't think of the date now, but anyway, maybe four or 5 weeks ago.
Annick,
that's right. Yeah, 16th of December. Yeah. So basically, those
we were
horses,
there, Andrew, weren't we?
Those horses went there, looking a picture, eating up, doing everything right, couldn't have been happier, and yet they ran absolutely dreadful. They ran too bad to be true.
Yeah. You had them tested?
We had them scoped before they ran, even.
Yeah.
But about 3 or 4 days before they ran. Maybe should have been a day before. But anyway, since they've come back, you know, you've seen signs that, well, they were doing something different before they ran.
Yeah. In terms of the overall sort of the regime of how the vaccination process works in racing yards, Andrew, obviously you've worked at them pretty much all your life. How does that actually work from when, you know, when they first come in?
Well, a lot of horses will come in and they'll get the bits and bobs of injections, and then at a certain time of year, And Paul Nicholls is one for it, just after Christmas. Once the racing is thins out a little in January, a lot of his will get the vaccinations done. And they'll have to probably, Bimmers will probably tell you better, you probably need a couple of weeks.
On the easy
just
list.
Just go quiet on them for 10 days. Just they won't lose fitness, but the whole thing is not to get them sweated up. That is the key factor. You know, when they've had a jab or a flu, just to make sure they don't get stressed and don't do too much, and just go quietly with them. And obviously the withdrawal period for running horses after they've had the vax probably give them the best part of 10 days, 2 weeks anyway. So it's, you know, it's trainers will do things at different times of the year, whatever suits their regime. And every trainer is different.
Thank you very much, Andrew, and thanks for your time, and we'll speak to you in due course.
Right, catch you later.
Cheers, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
So we've heard from Bruce, we've heard from Andrew, Pimmers was involved as well, and now Pimmers, the spotlight is well and truly on you. We are relying on you for winners at Dundalk on Friday evening. As I mentioned, it's the one meeting that we know will go ahead as we record this. So we're focusing on two of the better contests at Dundalk. And we start with a 6 o'clock race. Now, there's just the five runners in this race, but you could probably give all of them a squeak. And in their own right, they are all pretty solid performers. And you wouldn't mind owning one or two of these.
No, a lot of them are fairly unexposed. So that's a positive. A lot of them have nice profiles, and as the betting suggests, 6-4 Call For Me, 7-4 Sky 7, we go 11-2 then Numerian, it's 10-1 Evasive Power, and also 7-1 Swiss Steerage. Now Swiss Steerage is an interesting one here, because sold for 55,000 guineas at the October Tattersall sales, now with Damien English having been with Carl Burke, got an official rating of 100. So if you'd looked at this and thinking, well, if this was a handicap, he'd be giving weight all round. To have him at 7-1 seems quite interesting.
He's given a lot of weight to all bar Call For Me as well,
didn't he? That's right, yeah. But whether it's because change of hands, different trainer, different scenario, not too sure. But they make him a 7-1 shot, which, you know, come 6:05 tomorrow night, he might look pretty pretty generous. But Call For Me is definitely the interesting one. He's a worthy favourite, trained by Joseph O'Brien. He came good last time out here at Dundalk. That was over 8 furlongs. Drops a furlong tomorrow evening back to 7. But his profile looks very impressive. He beat Numerian fairly easily by 2¾ lengths. And there certainly should be no reason why his progression can't continue. Off a mark of 85. Then when he won, handicapper took a dim view of that easy success up to a mark of 95. But the ticks are in the boxes. There could be an awful lot more to come from this son of Camford Cliffs.
And as we mentioned, the fact that Swisterius is rated 100 and Call For Me 95, again, if it was a handicap, Call For Me would be conceding a fair bit of weight to the other three in the race as well.
So exactly.
The fact that it isn't a handicap certainly means that Call For Me could have outstanding claims. And would that be the pick?
Most definitely. Okay. Call For Me.
That's in the 6 o'clock race at Dundalk. The 6:30, we've got plenty more runners to go at, Pimmers. It's a pretty open handicap.
Nine runners go to post. That's all good. If they all start, or should I say, 10 runners go to post. If they all stand on the ground, we've got a bit of a each way slant to that. And again, it's interesting that Joseph O'Brien's going to have the favourite here in the shape of the Game of Life, course and distance winner in the past. Finished second last time we saw him at Game of Life. That was here behind Alzan Bin Zain. Again, he dropped back a furlong there. He won over 8, dropped back to 7 last time, back to 8 tomorrow. I think that course surely should be significant, because when he got beaten last time out, he was definitely doing his best work at the end of the race to stay on to take second. So I think going back to a mile certainly going to be in his favour tomorrow evening. 20 minutes is interesting, a very tough, very consistent son of Rip Van Winkle. Again, races off a mark of 74. And again, he ran in a Dundalk apprentice maiden last time out and finished second behind Master Diver. That was a plenty good enough run. And again, if there should be a little bit more to come from him, then he should well be in the mix. And the other horse I thought was interesting is a horse that's looking to go for a hat-trick of wins, Gugain Barra. I think that's how we pronounce it. Having won its last two races, both over 8 furlongs here at Dundalk. Gradually going up the weights, mind, having set off winning ways at 55, then won at 64. Tomorrow, races off a mark of 71. So that profile has still got to progress. But again, there should be no reason why it shouldn't take another step forward. But for me, the game of life is very difficult to oppose.
So Joseph O'Brien double, it could be a quick fire one as well.
And I just hope he's wearing his cap. I do love his cap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why?
It's the black and white tweed one.
Are you? Yeah. Big fan?
Big fan. Mm, yeah. If he ever leaves it behind, I'll be having it.
Chris Pimlott then, cap thief, maybe a Dundalk tipster extraordinaire. Well, we'll soon
very undaily listener, to be sure.
We'll soon see. And just an update, 5 minutes off the back of recording the racing podcast, we did actually get news that there won't be any racing in the UK until next Wednesday at the earliest. So hopefully by then everything will have cleared up and the BHA will have done what they need to do. As always, they'll be doing their best to maintain the health of the horses in question. So fingers crossed everything's okay. No UK racing until Wednesday the 13th of February though. So that is something to bear in mind. Dundalk still set to go ahead though on Friday. You've heard the thoughts of Pimmers, and make sure you tune in to William Hill Racing Radio on Friday for all of the action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.